Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 26, and we've had, I guess, a little bit of a boring week compared to average, at least the last few weeks. I mean, there wasn't really any super big news. Last week was so jam-packed with, like, you know, Google Home Hub, I think, was last week, and some other things. I forgot what, but, like, last week was so crazy.
And when you say it wasn't packed, it was actually Google's 20th anniversary.
That is true. It's significant. I think we should remember that and let Google have that moment, because pretty much no one cares.
No, they don't really care, because they should have celebrated on September 4th, the day they were actually incorporated as a company. But for the past decade, they decided they celebrate on September 27th for whatever reason.
Yeah, there's a lot of Google birthdays happening right now. The other big thing was 10 years for Android, or 10-year anniversary of the T-Mobile G1. Yeah, and we can talk about that a little bit. You did a hands-on with the Sooner, yes, which is not yours. You didn't do a hands-on. Seth Weintraub, publisher, 9to5, he has a Sooner. I'm presuming he's had it for 10 years now, or 11 years. I guess it's 11 years, but your headline on that was brilliant. So do you want to chat about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the HTC, the HTC G1, T-Mobile G1 is codenamed HTC The Dream. And this HTC device is named Sooner. I finally got why they were named that this week when I was writing that post. Because the Sooner is based on this existing QWERTY BlackBerry copy of an HTC phone that already existed, while the G1, they for HTC anyways, this was had a lot of firsts. It was the first of the Qualcomm processor. It did that crazy thing with the hinge, if you remember. It was like wasn't a straight slide.
It was like a sidekick, kind of.
It was a sidekick, basically. And that was a lot of firsts for them. But what the Android team is actually developing Android on for a large portion of the early days was this Sooner device, which has a QWERTY keyboard, smallish screen, and was basically a BlackBerry. No touchscreen either.
Yeah, I think it was actually interesting. I was reading up on it a bit this week as you were writing about it, and how the Sooner was actually made kind of anticipating that maybe Windows Phone was going to be a threat, which is hilarious.
Windows Mobile, it's
hilarious in hindsight, thinking that, you know, Google kind of looked at it as Windows Mobile might be a threat in the same, you know, Windows Mobile was kind of hoping to do the same thing that Windows did, which was entice as many OEMs to license their software as many as possible. And so Google saw that as a threat and they wanted to compete with that. And it's actually interesting to how that, you know, that completely turned out. It turned out that Windows Phone had there was nothing. Sorry. There's nothing to be scared of on that front. But then the iPhone came out and obviously that was much more of a threat. but another thing was that engineer who, I forgot his name, but you mentioned him in your post, I think. He was on the Sooner team. And he was talking about she was talking about how actually, like, this narrative that the G1 was kind of like response to the iPhone is not exactly true. And that the G1 was actually probably going to happen around that time anyway, just coincidentally. Because the Sooner was such old tech and it was so, you know, rudimentary, and it was basically just a carbon copy of an existing device so that they could have a dev platform for Android. That was interesting to me, because I've always believed or thought that was actually true, that the G1 happened, like Google was like, you know, behind the times, and then the iPhone happened, and then they were like, all right, back to the drawing board. We have 1 year to put out a, you know,
there's this famous story of Andy Rubin at CES in Las Vegas watching the Steve Jobs keynote on his laptop, and he told his cab driver to, like, pull over, and he watched the announcement and, like, told the team to, like, start over. That's like a famous narrative. But
is that true? I mean, based on what she was writing, it sounds like that maybe, I don't know, maybe Andy Rubin had a strong reaction, but I think the narrative of Andy Rubin saying, like, you guys have to basically start over is probably not true.
It's wrong. Yeah. They always had this device in mind, but maybe the iPhone maybe caused them to move it up. The thing with the Suna device was it could have been released to the public, but according to this engineer, 4 months before the iPhone, they decided to can it in favor of putting all resources on Dream, on the HTC Dream, and this more future working platform.
Which, yeah. Actually, looking back on it, the G1 is, I don't know, man, that thing's a dinosaur.
It tried to do everything.
Physical keyboard. No headphone jack either. That was before its time, right? Well, it wasn't. Didn't the G1 didn't have a headphone jack, and it came with a dongle in the box, right?
Yep, mini USB adapter, a mini USB too.
It's funny how things come full circle like that.
Sad way. Open standards are dead.
But if you think about it, it kind of makes sense in a way. I mean, so like, you know, Android was kind of built with the mindset of they were kind of trying to take on Windows Phone and like the potential, like at the time, you know, BlackBerry was huge and
yeah.
They're going after business clients, you know, yeah. business
music
customers. And so music was not really a primary, you know, point or the device. It wasn't really a consumer-y. If you think about it, it's crazy to think about now how, you know, it wasn't really a consumer facing product, like in some ways, at least not in the same way the iPhone was. You know, the iPhone came out and they were like, this is Steve Jobs said famously, like, it's a phone, a mobile communications device, and an iPod, a phone, a mobile, you know, whatever. And you know, that was the beginning of the smartphone really being a consumer product rather than this is a niche for enterprise customers, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's why the G1 didn't have a headphone jack, because they weren't thinking in those terms as much yet.
Do you remember the Droid Aries?
No, on the Ryzen?
That was my favorite early Android phone. It was made by HTC, surprisingly, even though it had the Droid name. And it was basically, it didn't have a keyboard. It was an all-screen device. And I thought it looked awesome.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I was actually like a significant holdout on smartphones. I guess maybe just
really? Being...
Maybe like technologically conservative version of me was just like not wanting it. I don't know what it was. I mean, I was all about the iPod Touch and I was all about MP3 players. But to me, I liked having my MP3 player, even a smart MP3 player like the iPod Touch, being separate from my phone for whatever reason. It doesn't make sense to me now, because now obviously I have like 100 smartphones in my drawer. But
it makes a ton of sense to me. I think we're going we're going backwards, honestly.
If you think about it, now everything's starting to break back apart. If it makes sense,
because that's awesome.
The Apple Watch is starting to break off, and a lot of people are using that as a cellular device to distance themselves from their phone and listen to music and podcasts on it while they're on a run,
mm-hmm.
and that's convenient. So yeah, it's another thing that's kind of coming full circle, where it's like we used to have an MP3 player and a phone and whatever, like whatever other devices, and then everything came together into the smartphone. And now that wearables are starting to become a thing, you know, it's breaking apart again. That's an interesting point. Didn't think about that.
Totally. This is out of left field, but I was on a plane once recently, and the guy next to me had that like $1,000 Sony MP3 player that runs Android. It was insane. It's like $1,000. It's like an audiophile grade quality, and he had it. And that's the first time I saw it in real life.
What was that product? Remember that weirdly shaped, like triangle shaped, like MP3 player, dedicated MP player.
Pono
was out. Yeah, that was what it was called. It played FLAX or whatever. Like, that was the selling point. It can play lossless audio. Like, that's all. That was the whole point of the product.
I forgot the musician that backed it.
Yeah, it had a couple. It had a few big name musicians who were like putting their weight behind it, but obviously, it's long gone.
I'll buy that in like 5 years when it's like $50 on eBay. It looks cool.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that our listeners probably did not come to listen to us ramble about
a retrospective.
Yeah. So let's jump into a little bit of Made by Google stuff, because the event is indeed a week and a week. Wait, what are we at now? Are we a week and a day or a week and 3 days away?
Yeah.
So a little over a week. Next week at this time, we'll be doing our last episode of Alphabet Scoop, basically going over our predictions and everything for the event. So we'll hold all of that for next week. But we need to fill a little bit of dead time at the beginning of this episode, because there's really not that much that happened this week besides everything that's already been happening, if that makes sense. Like, the Pixel 3 has been leaking since, you know, May, and that continued to happen this week. And I guess we can jump into that. One of the big things that leaked this week was the Live Wallpapers app APK or whatever. Comes from a guy named Ishan on Twitter. Apparently he has connections. I don't think he personally has one of those black market Pixel 3 XL devices, but I think he knows someone that has one. And so he's been kind of leaking little bits and pieces out. I think he's been giving a lot of stuff to My Smart Price. Unfortunately, we would love to have that instead. But one of those things was the APKs for these Live Wallpapers. And I think they look really, really, really beautiful.
This is in the way did you see that video of how Apple made the watch faces?
The fire and the water on the Apple Watch Series 4.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think what a lot of people don't know about the Pixel wallpapers, those like colorful blobs.
Are they similar?
Those are physical objects that people actually take pictures of. They make the models, they string them up with wire, and then they just, in After Effects, they remove it. But yeah, those are physical wallpapers. And all those material ones too. High resolution pictures of physical objects and
paper. Oh yeah. Yeah, I knew about the paper ones. Do we know about the, you know, like the live ones? So like the Grand Canyon one or like the
That is a good question.
Are those they look like CGI or like they look computer generated to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, one of the interesting things to me about these wallpapers, you know, we could talk probably 20 minutes about just these wallpapers, but the interesting thing to me is that they are now, as of the Pixel 3, and it looks like if you install the APK on a Pixel 2...
An Android Pi device.
Yeah, any Android Pi device. With the Pixel 3, they're launching with working on the ambient display. So, like, basically, you get, like, a little bit of a kind of ambient, like remnant or, like, leftover kind of, like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of very... I don't know.
Shadow.
That's a good word. Shadow. It's like a shadow of what you actually see on the wallpaper shows on the ambient display, which is really nice because
it's boring otherwise.
Yeah, the ambient display is pretty blank. I mean, and other companies have done. I think Samsung comes to mind. Have done like more intricate things with always on displays. And so for the last year, the Pixel 2 has basically just been clock notifications. Date and then at the bottom the battery percentage, and then also the ambient display on Pixel 2 XL, for those who don't know, has the the live music detection thing. So that's awesome, and now they're just a little bit prettier. I guess I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but I have one on my I think you can see it.
We got
like a moon kind of showing on the background of the ambient display. Ben Schoen did a hands-on with this, and he actually reluctantly, I basically forced him to do it, but we got video of every single one of the live wallpapers and side by side with what the ambient display version of those look like. So it's actually one of the most popular videos on our YouTube channel for the last.
It's very painstaking, and yes. I'm sure Ben would want me to say that process was very, very hard to capture.
Yes, and the dark ones I actually captured on the floor of my closet. So, yeah, go check out that video. It's pretty cool. I'm really excited about these wallpapers. But as we mentioned, I think they're going to be kind of faux exclusive to the Pixel 3. So like, obviously the APK that leaked, we have it installed on Pixel 2s and it works fine and on any Android Pi device. But in terms of official in the Google Wallpapers app, I would bet that the Pixel 2 is not getting these.
The first generation Pixels don't have the ones from Pixel 2. It's an artificial distinction, but it's fine. It's like,
you got to have those things.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things are artificial distinctions.
More important things to get mad about in the grand scheme of things.
Indeed. And then I guess that's that. We have the full res wallpapers in PNG form as well, if you don't want to go installing a rogue APK on your phone, which is probably a good idea.
Yes.
So you can download those as well. Also this week, the Pixel 3 leaked out again, but in the last week or two, we've seen lots and lots of official marketing images. So the first one was from WinFuture, and this showed for the very first time, notable, I think, both the smaller Pixel 3 and the Pixel 3 XL in both black and white. So we have confirmed that both of those devices come in both just black and clearly white, presumably. Yeah, I mean, it was our first look, I believe, at the smaller Pixel 3 in white. So that's notable. And then Evan Blass followed that up with renders. You know, he offered we wrote that he offered up the confirmation that we didn't need. Actually, I really, really appreciated this because, you know, we had a couple episodes back. We had the Pixel 3 nonsense episode, which we just talked about, or Pixel Ultra nonsense, I should say. You know, we talked about these Pixel Ultra conspiracy theories that were floating around Reddit and YouTube and elsewhere, which I think hold absolutely zero weight, as I've said many, many times. I really appreciated Evan Blass in this because his post was like, the entire like Pixel Ultra community or whatever you want to call it was like, well, I guess we're wrong. It was like a resounding sigh from everyone who was like hoping that there was a third Pixel. And that was very satisfying to watch.
Because
Evan Blass had been silent on Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL stuff up to now. Well, he had said they were coming, but he hadn't, you know, leaked any renders or anything. And so, I was very satisfied to see that. Another thing that happened this week was the Pixel 3 is apparently coming in a color called sand, according to the same guy, Roland from WinFuture.
So sand, what color is sand?
Well, I guess if we want to, you know, project onto Google, as I've mentioned many times, projecting onto Google what we want. We saw in the Japanese teaser site that there is a pink. What looks to be kind of a vague grayish pink. Yeah. You think that's related?
Yeah, it's probably that. It's like the cutesy form of pink because I can't just say pink for whatever reason or have simple colors. I'm sure some people like that. The key is to not make the colors so bland. Like this year's kind of blue, whatever that blue is a disgrace.
It's not going to push any phones.
No, it is a horrid color. It's white. It's so vague. It's so indistinct. It's so unoffensive that it's offensive.
I actually have some inside baseball on that. Last year, we were sent a photo of a Pixel 3, smaller Pixel 3 in a case. Pixel 2. Yeah, last year, obviously, because we're talking about last year. We got a Pixel 2 in a case, or an image of a Pixel 2 in a case, but my source said, you can't share the case because the case had that, you know, like that staticky design on it that we saw last year. Like, they were worried that maybe the static design would, you know, maybe the prototype they were using or whatever had some kind of signifier that would give them away. But anyways, long story short, you could see through the little window where the fingerprint sensor is on the back of the case, this like gray color. And so I wrote, like, the headline of the article was like, Pixel 3 will come in like, you know, third gray option or color or whatever. And then obviously it turned out to be the kind of blue model. And that just tells you how much, you know, how how bland of a color that is. Is that we actually had it. We were the only site that had our hands on a photo of it before. We could see the bottom of the phone too. Like we could see like the plastic or like the plastic coating on the, you know, on the metal on the bottom of the phone. So we were able to see the color like clear as day, and we did not pick up on the blue aspect of it at all. So that was, yeah, it's bland, long story short. But yeah, on the sand thing, I think it'll, I mean, if it is the pink, I think sand pink or pink sand might make, I think that sounds like a, you know, whimsical googly kind of thing to, mm-hmm. to do.
I hope, I don't know, maybe the thing we saw some, I forgot who tweeted that the mint might not end up being a color this year.
Yeah, Roland, the same guy that tweeted the sand thing, he was like, I doubt that the mint is actually a color today. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe he knows more than we do, but he said, that's I quote, I kind of doubt. So it doesn't sound like he really knows. Mm. But yeah, I'm hoping for mint too. I'm hoping that,
yeah,
based on what we know as of today, I'm hoping that there's like a pink sand or like a grayish pink, kind of like kind of blue, kind of pink. On either the small or the large, and then a mint on the other.
The color distinctions are going to be interesting because I know people who wanted that the black and white, the orange power button on the smaller phone this year.
Yeah.
So I hope it's consistent.
It seems kind of, I don't know. Last year, it didn't make clear sense as to why the colors were chosen the way they were. You know, it didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason for the smaller one getting the kind of blue and then the larger one getting the panda and so it seems like they're just kind of going with what feels right. So
on the software front, we had some leaks about the software. So the Google camera is going to get real-time Google Lens, which basically when you're on the viewfinder, lens will be running so that you don't have to go into a specific lens mode. That's a nice touch and should increase adoption. Do you use lens right now?
Do I use lens right now? Absolutely not. Never.
Yep.
It might as well be Google goggles.
Some say Google goggles is more powerful. But
yeah, it's probably
it
true.
Might be. Yeah, it might be. Very weird.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, I don't know. Here's what I would like. I would like this makes no sense for a lot of reasons because it would kill your battery, but I would like the back camera to always be on, and I would like it to always be watching for things, regardless of whether or not the viewfinder is actually open, and if it sees something relevant, pop something up on the ambient display. That's what I want. And that is feasible, but I don't know if it makes sense because running the battery 20 or running the camera 24/7.
Just add a second camera and decrease the resolution by the megapixel count.
Engineering team, just add a second camera. No big deal. You know, like obviously the product decisions are a lot more.
You know. No, I'm serious. Just have a low resolution camera on the back that's always on. Just make it do like vague object.
Yeah. Yeah, theoretically, that's a theoretically, you know, plausible scenario, but
object.
that's what I'm hoping.
Google Clips. It works on Google Clips.
Yeah, they're already kind of experimenting with that kind of thing, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see it in the next few years, but I don't think that they're doing it on the Pixel 3, but honestly, that is the kind of thing that they would be able to keep secret until the day of the event.
Yeah.
You know, AI powered features that are software only that might not have been on that pre-release build of Android Pie that leaked out of Ukraine.
100%. You know, yeah.
That's the kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things that might not have been on those phones. Who knows?
Mm. So they have
the dog food camera app. So
yeah, with the newish UI. I guess I had to get that tested.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So there's this Pixel Tips app that basically showed us what we think is this app's going to help people learn how to use a Pixel 3, which is it's good from getting switches to jump to the to Google's devices, to Android in general. We haven't really talked about this, about we know what the iPhones are, this year's iPhones, and we basically know what the Pixel 3 is. Will people be switching over once they see the Pixel 3 officially?
Do you mean people who are typically iPhone buyers? Do you think that Google will be convincing anyone with the Pixel 3 this year?
Yeah.
I don't know. The Pixel is an interesting device because it seems like they're going after iPhone buyers in one sense. Mm-hmm. In another sense, to me, the Pixel just feels like Google hardware is a unit now, and they make Google Home. They make a lot of things. They make laptops now. They're going to be making tablets if the Google Pixel Slate rumors are true. To me, part of me feels like the Pixel is just like we have to make a phone too. If we're going to make all these things, you know, we might as well make a good phone. And while they're at it, they're making a good phone that appeals to the average buyer. Just like, you know, they want to appeal to the average buyer with the Google Home. They want literally everyone to have a Google Home Mini in their bedroom. And they want literally everyone to have a Google Home Hub in their kitchen. It seems to me like they're kind of just like, it's not the same kind of dynamic, you know, like with Samsung versus Apple. It's kind of like, you know, huge punches, like, you know, this is the Galaxy Note 9. We're trying to take on the iPhone and convince every single little iPhone buyer we can to get a Samsung. And we're going to release ads that criticize Apple stores and everything that Genius Bar does. And then, you know, we have Apple, which kind of does similar things. They don't make those personal jabs in marketing, but, you know, Apple wants to prove and show their phone as the best phone. The iPhone XS, the iPhone XS Max is, you know, they come out making a statement and have these huge promo marketing videos. They have all these huge, advertisements and banners on huge buildings and cities. And, obviously Google cares, but it feels like the real battle as of today is still Samsung versus Apple. And, you know, Google is kind of like, we'll do us. And if we convince some Samsung buyers and some Apple buyers along the way, we're happy with that. If we convince a lot of buyers who have been straggling with those dying Android OEMs like LG, like, awesome. And I think that's pretty much what we're seeing. I think that we're seeing Apple and Samsung really kind of, you know, continue that war. But a lot of these third-party Android OEMs are like bleeding, and Google's just, you know, picking up the pieces. And, you know, I think also at the same time, the Pixel is convincing enough that they're attracting some buyers from the Apple camp and from the Samsung camp. Because obviously the Pixel's growing. It may not be selling huge numbers of units. It's not. I mean, they sold as many phones in all of 2017 as Apple sells in like 2 days. So it's like, you got to keep that in perspective when you're thinking about Pixel versus iPhone or Pixel versus Galaxy Note 9 or Galaxy S9 or whatever. You know, you have to keep that in perspective that they're a small, tiny dog, and they know that it's like David and Goliath, basically. And I think that at the end of the day, Google just cares about making a good phone. If we see good growth year over year, awesome. If we can convince, you know, 10%, 20%, 30% of our Google Home buyers, dedicated Google Home buyers who love the Google Home, to buy the phone or vice versa, then, you know, it's a win-win-win-win situation. That's how I kind of look at it. I see Google hardware as like, they just want to make good products, and they're using their marketing muscle to push them as much as possible. But at the end of the day, I think Google cares more, obviously, about their bottom line. Their bottom line has never been hardware. It's always been ad dollars. And I don't see that changing for the foreseeable future. But the Google Home and Google Pixelbook and the Pixel phones are all kind of, you know, Google for the first time taking seriously and hedging its bets. And, you know, also, like, I don't see it as like Google is really going to kill Apple. It's like, no, we can also do great hardware. And they just want to do that for their own sake. At least that's, you know, I'm off my soapbox now, but that's how I see it. What do you think about it?
I agree, but in regards to foreseeable future, I think we're three years in. I think we're getting to a point where they want to be number one. Android, right? Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 more years, but at the you get in this mock into this low, this high research market with low, this low margin market to win eventually. And I think that they will want to be number one at some point. And they think that these AI features match with this hardware can one day do it. Absolutely. So I think it's more of a time, the times far, not too far off in the distant future, they will want to be the biggest player and they want to own
that's
it
a good
all.
Point. That's a really good point. And I completely agree with you. I just think that if we're looking at the 5 to 10 year purview of like, they're going to infuse AI into everything and they're really going to push Google Home and they're really going to push all these products. I think in the 5 to 10 year like outlook, the phone, the Pixel phone becomes less and less important to that success every year. Because I think that, you know, phones in general, obviously they're important and they're like the number one consumer product in our lives. But I think that they've kind of plateaued. And I think over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see ambient computing become more and more important. We're going to see wearables become more and more important. And I think Google entering and really winning in those spaces is at the end of the day going to be more important than whether or not the Pixel is the best selling smartphone. And the Pixel can just be a complement to that ecosystem. Like that's how I see it.
Again, I am a very big believer in wearable technology being the future. But I guess recently I've taken a more reserved view that until the technology for wearable glasses with tiny batteries that last a full day, until we have tiny cameras, tiny processors, tiny everything, until that technology has shaken out, I think the phone is still the key to, if you want to have relevance, if you want to have dominance, I think the phone is still the only proven player in the market as the most important consumer device. We're still moving off the phone in a way is a post-PC device, but there's still so many people on the PC that have yet to fully transition to the phone being able to be their work device, to be the center. The phone as is the center of a person's digital life. But I think we're waiting for that. The big shift, the next big moving is for the work audience to change.
Yeah, I think that this also connects to the fact that the Pixel Watch is not happening this year. Yes. In a sense, I think that Google wants to come out with something really, really competitive to the Apple Watch when they do come out with something, because I think they do see the significance and the importance of wearables. And I think that, man, like every day Apple seems more and more like they are pivoting. Like they are pivoting to be a wearables company.
Yes.
Obviously the iPhone's not going anywhere, but you know, they're taking the watch so seriously. They're investing and reinvesting every year and it's getting so much better. And this year, the big, you know, like killer feature or like the big value add is that for the first time, the Apple Watch is very clearly like, this can save lives.
Yes.
And you know, the thing is like, how many dollars is your life being saved worth? And the answer to that for most people is infinite. And you know what they've done with the AirPods and just the entire ecosystem and working together so well. And I think Tim Cook has always said, you know, AR is going to be the next big thing. And I think he stands by that. And I think Apple's investing in that area as we speak, and we just haven't seen it because, you know, Apple's so secretive. But, you know, I think Google sees that is going to be like, that's where they're going to have to compete with Apple in the next few years.
And what they've done so far is Pixel Buds.
Exactly.
That is the first entry.
Pixel Buds is our preview of where Google is with competing with Apple's wearable prowess. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly, it's not in an optimistic outlook.
Yes, Pixel Buds 2. Hopefully is a game-changing device.
If I were to guess, I'd guess that Pixel Buds 2 is essentially Pixel Buds, but you know, without the wire.
Yeah.
I think that's the obvious, you know,
yeah.
It's the obvious presumption.
Because if you're looking at the limitations of these current wearable devices that are not made by Apple, it's a chip. All these companies have to start developing their own silicon if they want to really compete. And I think that is the trend of the future.
And Google's making inroads there.
So yes, they are.
That's a positive sign.
My apologies. I don't understand.
Everything I say on this podcast is setting off my home mini. But yeah, they've got the Pixel Visual Core, which we've heard from one not so reliable source that there's going to be a new Pixel Visual Core in the Pixel 3, which is that's significant because you know it's just you know it's evidence that Google's you know doubling down on silicon and I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. That, another thing about that is that it's another thing that Google could keep secret. There's no spec app that's going to tell us that there's a new Pixel Visual Core. And so what will enable is a mystery.
These Ukrainian buyers have not torn down the phone yet.
I know.
Oh, come on. That's a missed opportunity.
You've had it for a month. You've had it for a month and you've, you know, made 10 videos and posted all the pictures and leaked everything. And you can't just like take a screwdriver to it and rip it apart and just show us the inside too. Why not?
Oh, that's lame.
Actually, that actually might be a good idea. Someone should talk to them and pitch the idea. I bet they would double their page views on Pixel 3 leaks if they did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, but speaking of, well, what should we go to next? I think Home Hub and Pixel Slate, we have about 20 more minutes. Home Hub this week. So last week was the big Google Home Hub leak. And, you know, we basically learned everything through this, what looked to be some kind of retailer specification page website, screenshots of it, at least. And at the time, we only saw the white version with the, I guess, what do you call the white? Chalk.
Chalk.
Yeah, chalk with, you know, the white display tablet-esque device thing sitting on it. Which we don't think is detachable as of right now. But this week we saw the charcoal version, which is, as you'd expect, basically the same thing as the charcoal version of other Google Home products. So there's a charcoal Google Home Mini. There's also a charcoal Google Home Max. And I'm pretty sure it's the same fabric, dark gray-ish color. Interestingly, though, the display is white still. Which,
yeah.
What do you think is the reasoning with that?
It betrays the cost of the device, rather the affordability of the device.
Reusing components, I guess.
Yeah, the Panda works for some people. I think it's not going to be the worst thing.
No, I don't think it's the worst thing. I think it looks nicer than the white, and that's
actually
apparently been an unpopular opinion because everyone in our comment section was like, "The white one looks so much better."
I think it's a white bezel because the smart display is it's white. Everything it's displayed against a white background. I think maybe that might help with the
UI is all white, so it would not look so good if it didn't have a dark mode.
Oh, we can start Android for that first.
Another thing that happened on the hardware front for next week's, I guess, can we start saying next week's event?
Yeah, might as well.
A little over a week is the Pixel Slate. So we've been talking about Nocturne for a really long time. Strongly suspect that it is Google's tablet/convertible that they're launching at the October 9th event. This week, David Ruddick over at Android Police tweeted that the Google Pixel Slate is the name. Which is actually really funny because we've been saying, if you've been following Alphabet Scoop and listening along, we've been saying the Google Pixel Slate name on here for the last like 4 months or something because we got a tip that it was a name being thrown around for what we now know as the Home Hub or a smart display device in general. And it turned out that apparently, I mean, maybe that's true, maybe it's not true, but we heard the name and we've been saying it, but it looks like Google has chosen it for the Pixel tablet/convertible. And I actually realized my headline said Google Pixel Slate is the name of the first Pixel tablet. And I realized that that's not true. The Pixel C was the first Pixel tablet, technically. But this is the first Chrome OS Pixel tablet, which all the evidence, I guess I can pull up the Nocturne post right now and give you an idea. we strongly believe that Nocturne is the Pixel Slate. And what we know about Nocturne is that it has two cameras, it has a fingerprint sensor, it has a few keyboards that have shown up in Chromium that would pair with it. So it's definitely like a unconvertible Surface Pro-like device. There are two cameras already? Yeah, there's a Sony IMX319, also used by the Zenfone 4. And on the rear is a Sony IMX355, which you may know from the OnePlus 5 and the Huawei P10. So decent cameras. Mm-hmm. We do know, what else do we know? Yeah, those are the big points. We know it won't have an SD card slot, which is one of the things that tip us off that it was a Pixel Slate or Pixel Book, because in Chromium Source, you know, you can basically see whether or not devices have an SD card slot, and the Pixel Book is notoriously one that doesn't have one. So that's that. We know that it has screen resolution of 3000 by 200, so it's a 3:2 aspect ratio. Pretty high resolution screen. That's pretty notable. I think I did the PPI on that, and it's like upward. It's like around 300 or something.
Ooh.
If you do the math on that, if you assuming you know, I don't know, 10 or 11 inches. I don't know. We don't know the size. I don't think we know the size of the display yet. But it's like up there. It's like 250 plus if you assume a certain size. Obviously, don't trust my math on that. But that's just a guess. And then. Yeah, so that's that. I think
it's a good name.
I think that's pretty much. Yeah, I agree. It's a really good name. Yeah. And actually, it's really funny. If you remember, Mark Gurman over at 9to5 Mac, I might be remembering this wrong, but I think he found the iSlate name in an Apple trademark. And so we know for a fact that iSlate is one of the names that Apple considered for the iPad. Which that's an interesting little tidbit, and it's here we are, you know, whatever, 5, 10, how many years has it been? When was the iPad launched? 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
6 years ago, I think. Yeah, and now Google's using the Slate name, so Google Pixel Slate, according to David. Yeah, pretty sick name, I think. We don't know a lot of details about this thing. We don't know, you know, price. We don't know a lot of little minor details. Presume it runs Chrome OS, so there's a lot you can know about the software based on that, especially since we already know a lot about Chrome OS 70. So yeah, anything else on that?
Swipe collection, first iPad 2010.
Wow.
8 years.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Oof. I did not realize it's been there for that long. But that's about it on Pixel Slate.
All right.
If it's called Pixel Slate.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think we can say that pretty confidently. David says he trusts his source. So whatever that's worth. And then I guess we talked about this at the top of the show, but this was Google's 20 year. So there was a birthday doodle and they celebrated. They also had this really funny like love letter thing to Easter eggs, where they made this graphic that shows every single Google Easter egg. And one of my interesting takeaways on that was the metronome is actually shown on that graphic. And if you type in metronome in Google, you'll know what this is. It's like, you know, a metronome. But I thought that was intentional. I didn't know it was like a Easter egg.
Yeah. But yeah, the 20th anniversary came with an event where they prepared for the next 20 years of search. To briefly run this down, so the Google feed is getting rebranded to Google Discover, and it's coming to google.com on the web, on the mobile web. So you're going to the notoriously stock google.com is about to get much busier when this feed rolls out.
On mobile, at least.
On mobile, at least. I kind of want it on the web now. Might as well. Early Google was like magical. They had so much stuff that you can just explore and like customize to your heart's desire. Oh, yeah. Google Images is getting a desktop redesign. Google Images on mobile is adding Google Lens. Google Lens again. But this cool thing with Google Search, it's adding subtopics where you basically have this. So let's say you search for a specific type of dog that is like high maintenance. It'll suggest results like pet care or like hair grooming as like a subtopic among others, like what types of food they eat, like and other just similar things, some very specific dynamic results, which I think is going to be really useful going forward, rather than it's a Google suggesting what a lot of people, what other people search for, but in a way that makes it very hyper-specific and hyper-dynamic. That should be an exciting thing that starts going out later this year. But yeah, that is Google at 20.
Well, I'm excited to see. Personally, the thing I'm most excited about is this mobile revamp. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Because, you know, Google.com is the most visited website, period. And so, I don't know. It's a risky move, you know? Any change you're making to, you know,
what I would add that is important. That how many people go to Google.com on the phone?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Search bars, especially on iOS. I mean, no one, you don't go to Google.com to search. You just type it in the top
bar and obviously the results page.
Yeah, obviously on Android, it's, you know, there's search bars on the home screen. So there's no real, it's a good point. Google.com on mobile is probably not a huge significant.
It's not risky.
And so if they probably only have room to gain on that front.
Yeah.
Whereas on desktop, you know, Google.com is the homepage of so many people's browser. And the
Which
fact
is interesting,
that it,
isn't it?
Yeah.
You and I and other techie people would be like, why? It's in your dress bar.
Or Chrome users who have it on the new tab screen too. I think that's something to remember, is that if you're using any browser but Chrome, you know, upwards of, I would guess like 90% of people probably have Google.com as their homepage. And so it's, you know, I think a big part of that, a big part of the reason, I think a lot of people are asking this question, is like, why would Google do this and add all this stuff to the mobile homepage if they're not going to do it on the desktop? And I think the answer is speed, because, you know, that's part of what made Google such a perfect homepage for, you know, legacy desktop web browsers for such a long time, was that it loaded instantly. And adding a discovery or Google feed, even if it only adds like a second or like two, people will notice. There's that. There was a lot of drama with Chrome 69 this week. So, or was that last week? Did we talk about this last week?
It was early this week, I think. It was like a Monday thing.
Okay, well, for those that don't know, go ahead, Abner, you can explain.
So, Chrome 69 made these changes involving sign-in. I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah, I think we did too. But this week, Google came out and clarified again the situation.
That signing into Gmail in your browser does not turn on Chrome Sync, which is the thing that stores your bookmarks, your history into the cloud. That's the concern. But again, that does not happen. And in Chrome 70 later this month, Google will be giving users the option to disassociate signing into Gmail, YouTube, and that not signing into Chrome as a browser in general.
Yeah, I think it's actually interesting that this whole drama happened in the first place, because the average person, you know, it's not even like this. This is like completely, you know, a non-issue to most people. Like, no one noticed this except for the most, you know, basically I would call them like privacy watchdogs, you know, like people who are like watching every little move that these companies make to see Google like encroaching on, you know, little, like taking little steps. In this case, it didn't change anything functionally. Like, no one's data is being uploaded to the Google server that they don't want uploaded unless they intentionally opt in or check a box that gives them permission. But, you know, this was, I think, the main concern here. We talked about this last week, was that, you know, this is one step closer to Google being able to pull one switch that makes everyone's data uploaded off, like automatically. So this was much ado about nothing, in my opinion. Do you agree?
I agree.
And it doesn't even seem like it doesn't even seem like a big deal, even if it was intentional.
Yeah, it's again like moving forward, we are going to see whether people are accepting the trade-off of giving all the data and getting like getting back this like super AI assistant that is like super powerful and super personalized. We're going to see if people accept that trade-off going forward when AI starts getting good. And it's really exciting to see whether people want the assistance or whether people want the privacy.
Yeah, I guess that's the big picture conversation. And it's, I think every bit of evidence so far has kind of, I don't know, there's arguments for and against. Obviously, Google is now the subject of a really controversial debate now with their considering launching a search engine in China, and how Google may have affected the outcome of the election thanks to Russian meddling, or how, you know, they're kind of getting themselves in hot water the same way Facebook has, and Twitter as well. Obviously, notoriously, a few weeks ago, Google didn't show up to testify in a Senate hearing, which I think was dumb. I definitely think Sundar should have been there. But yeah, it's the bigger conversation is you know, is this privacy trade-off worth it for the small, you know, for us personally, but also for the greater society. Obviously, Apple's the only company that so far has escaped unscathed because they're so...
Have you met Siri?
Yeah, that's the trade-off. Apple has escaped unscathed because Siri sucks. Yeah, so I guess to round up the show, we have some app updates this week. Google Calendar 6.0 got Material Theme.
It's not great.
We talked about Google Lens already. 1.1 brings visual search to the share menu. Android Messages is rolling out advanced search with filters for images, videos, and links.
Also rolling out is the redesign of Wear OS. This just today, Google announced that this redesign where you can swipe, one swipe gets you to Assistant, Google Fit. There's a revamp notifications which are look really nice. And I think there were several reviews today, but the general consensus is that we're waiting for better hardware for this operating system. Right?
Another thing was the LG, what's it called? LG Watch
W7?
LG Watch W7? Whatever it is, it's a terrible name. But yeah, Evan Blass confirmed a previous leak. So Android Headlines had the whole scoop on that, which is basically that this watch is a hybrid Wear OS based watch that has both physical like watch hands and a digital interface somehow. And Evan Blass confirmed that device is launching alongside the V40. So that's interesting to see. I think that LG might have considered launching this at I/O and they pushed it back for whatever reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the conversation was there, but that's really interesting. So LG's event is on October 3rd, in a few days, actually. And that's going to be followed up by Google on October 9th.
There's so many watch events. I forgot about the LGs. Yes.
There's so many phones launching this month. But really, we only care about the Google hardware, or at least that's our primary focus. We have the luxury now of primarily focusing on the Google hardware. So you can trust us as your primary source for information relating to Google's hardware. And we will be at the event in a little over a week, as mentioned earlier at the top of the show, October 9th to Tuesday. We're really excited. And yeah, there's going to be a lot to see, but most of it probably stuff we've already seen. One interesting thing that I think might happen is we might see Google, you know, announce some things in the lead up to the event too, because it's kind of what they did with I/O is they have too much, and they want to let some things not get lost in the noise of that event. I think we're probably going to have like 40 or 50 articles going up on that day. And that goes for a lot of technology publications on that day. So we may see some things announced in the coming week as we lead up to the event. But yeah, we're really excited. Until the event, or I guess until next week, next Friday, as mentioned, also at the top of the show, we're going to be doing a big roundup show, basically, you know, everything we expect to see, everything we hope to see. And until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, which we forgot to mention, added Chromecast support, widely rolling out for everyone today.
So you
should listen to our podcast on Google Podcasts and Chromecast it to whatever device you want. That's a big deal. And you can also listen to 9to5 Google Daily, by the way. And you can also, if you want, listen to this podcast over on 9to5google.com. Download it there. Download the MP3 if you've got one of those old-style MP3 players. You want to download the actual MP3, you can do that too. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me. And we'll see you next week for that last show before the event.
Bye.